This begins Tape 8 of the PDH online course E315, Industrial HVAC Controls. We're going to go to a sidebar immediately. Bogus concern over foreign voltages. There are national electric code provisions forbidding foreign voltages. 430.74 for motor starters, 409.30 for control panels, and OSHA 1910.333. What they mean is that the disconnect on a box is supposed to turn off all the voltages inside the box. This is a good idea, and it is the law, and everybody agrees. However, it is also impossible, and everybody ignores it. Consider our present situation. We want a PLC to turn off a lot of fans individually. The basic fan control circuit is as follows, and this is going to be a ladder diagram, 120 on the left, neutral on the right. We've got an off-on selector switch as the control device, starter motor coil, and overload. Now, the off-on selector switch is at the control panel, the motor starter coil and overload are at the starter. Absolutely conventional, very simple, very easy to understand, nothing to argue about, until we start doing a bunch of them. If we source it from the starter, and what I'm doing now is doing a little more physical representation of the ladder diagram. I'm leaving the ladder diagram on the right because we're getting the starter 120 volt AC and the starter neutral as the source and return. We're leaving the starter and overloads on the load side connected to the neutral. Hey, everything's keen there. But we're pulling off the wires between the source and the 120 volt coil on the starter. And we're taking them over to the other side, which is at the control panel. So we're putting the selector switch that is off on in the control panel, and we're bringing in voltage from the starter. So we've got foreign voltage in the control panel. Now, what does that mean? If we got a big control panel, we got a lot of fans, we've got a lot of foreign voltages in the control panel. It's just about impossible to turn off those voltages so that the panel is de-energized. Well, turning off the plant power can do it, turning off the substation can do it, but you got an awful lot of motors to turn off if you want that panel to be cold. So you're going to be working on the panel hot. That is in contradiction to OSHA. It's in contradiction to the best reasoning of the National Electric Code. It's a bad thing, but it's just about the only way to work on it. Also, the fact you kind of like to see what happens when you flip the switch, which you can't do unless it's energized. Now, that's a preference thing from an old guy, not the new guys who are so good at working on de-energized circuits. Okay, we just did the power source at the motor starter, which produced foreign voltages at the control panel. Now we're going to try it the other way. We're going to put the 120 source and 120 volt neutral at the control panel. We're going to hardwire the on-off switch into the 120 source at the control panel, and we're going to run it over to the motor starter and then the neutral over to the motor starter so we can pick up the starter coil and overload at the motor starter. Now we've got foreign voltages in the motor starter. So it kind of looks like you're going to have foreign voltages in the control panel or foreign voltages in the motor starter. And we're going to have a little bit of a problem either way. Obviously, you need a sticker, foreign voltages present, not de-energized when disconnect is open. You have to decide which end you are willing to accept foreign voltage. It's not a choice of no foreign voltages. As we saw in the EF8 PLC module example, both choices are valid, but preferably not for the same fan. Now, I'm going to skip the section here on PLC outputs. The reasoning is almost identical with a special peculiarity I will mention. We can get isolated output or common source outputs. And what that means is two wires for each circuit or one wire for each circuit with a common source. Which one is better? Both of them are acceptable. There are times when each of them has a better application, but both of them are usable in most applications. I said outputs have some peculiarities over inputs. In my experience, we always use a relay output. Why do you use a relay output? Because we were raised on relays. In the early PLCs, we had a PLC output that operated a relay because you expected that relay to burn up and you wanted to be able to pull it out and put in another one. A replacement relay costs $10. You get your plant back online, everybody's happy. And we expected it to burn up. That was an expected failure mode. Well, it dawned on somebody that an electromechanical relay isn't half as reliable as a solid-state output. It's one-tenth as reliable as a solid-state output. So a relay diminishes your reliability on a statistical basis. Now, yeah, you put a screwdriver across the wrong terminals, you're going to blow a solid-state output faster than you're going to blow a relay. But deep down inside, come along with me, you can move from one point to a spare point and save your $10 and save all of the capital wiring and additional thinking of the auxiliary relay. So what is done today is we leave spare contacts. You always leave spare contacts. The rule I've seen is 20%, and I've actually seen installations up to 50%. What's that for? Well, that's so you can add something to it while it's in the field before it's started up, and it doesn't cause anybody any pain. But it's also so when they're doing maintenance, they can just move to a different contact and keep the process running with a very minor software change. Now again, relays and solid state. Well, first, old guys like relays, and we still put in relays. And I was talking to several PLC programmers, and one of them, no, I guess it was yesterday, not today, still put in relays, still like relays. Old guys like relays. New guys, I think, are more comfortable with the solid state inputs and outputs. What are solid state outputs? Well, back in the 1970s, yes, when we first invented this, they had TRIAC outputs. And TRIAC output seemed like such a good idea. They're inherently zero crossing. I mean, with just a little bit of trouble, they're inherently zero crossing. And they're great for operating heaters or operating things that are operating heaters. And TRIACs have a wonderful reputation for reliability. They handle short-term overloads. I mean, just all these good things for TRIACs. You can buy TRIAC outputs. You can buy common TRIAC outputs or isolated TRIAC outputs. However, the most common output today is a DC sourcing or DC syncing output. And this is part of this revolution to the auto industry, from the auto industry to serve the auto industry, which is such a good idea, it's being picked up by everybody else. Now, on the current project, we've ordered a bunch of packaged equipment. I will be very interested to open the covers and see how they're doing it. If they've got auxiliary relays that you plug in, if they've got embedded relays soldered into the circuit, if they've got sourcing and syncing on DC circuits, exactly which method is used. Industrial facilities is not as fast as adopting these automotive design changes as other fields might be. Final discussion of control utility to operator. We started with big control panels of switches and lights and a very big panel of lights only. This was the client preference in 1993 and in 2009. However, in 2010, the client changed the scope to an HMI, human machine interface. As indicated previously, the HMI is a sexy graphic interface with lots and lots of features and the reliability of Microsoft Windows. That is to say, everything else in the HMI is more reliable than the hard disk and the operating system. Hard disks have a mean time to failure of 5 years. We used to rate Microsoft Windows in how many blue screens today. Per day, it is better now. This question for the particular application will be going on for the next few months as the course is being written. The client's decision will be reported in Part 2 along with commentary. In the meantime, your author is proposing a touchscreen graphic OIT with text only. Let's stop and say those words again because the words don't go together naturally. A touchscreen graphic OIT with text only. Wait a minute, when you say graph, you're supposed to have little green tanks that fill and empty, and the color changes halfway up when it fills up. Well, graphic OITs are extremely capable. That's what a graphic OIT is. A touchscreen is extremely capable. You don't have to fuss around with switches. You don't have to take off your gloves. It's just an awful lot easier to use a graphic touchscreen OIT than to use a panel. You can use bigger letters on them. You can use longer descriptions. You can even use these things where you can pull up a help by touching the corner of it where it explains what EF-7 means. It tells where it's located. It tells what process it serves. It tells which motor control center it comes out of. If you want, you can even put the wire numbers on the OIT. And some people go to the trouble of making this stuff available. So the OIT is a central repository of the information on the facility. Now, I'll say that again. Your author is proposing a touchscreen graphic OIT with text only. What I'm saying is, I want text, and I want the text to work for me. I don't want it to cause the operator to jump through hoops. I want it to answer the operator's question and make it easy for him to control the facility. So the graphic we're showing has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 columns. The columns are labeled name, tag, control, status, aux, AUX, and alarm. It's illustrated with SF 1 through 4, EF 1 through 23, MUA 1 through 4, AC 1 through 3, ACC 1 through 3. We didn't talk about AC, that's an air conditioner, and an ACC is the outside condenser unit. Okay, what goes on in these three columns? If it's working right, it says SF1 auto running. Doesn't that sound good? Okay, if it's not working, it says SF4 auto off. Aux has no information. Alarm says damper interlock. So it tells you why it's not running. It's trying to run and it's not running. The name column is blank. I did that intentionally because I want the operators to figure out what they want to call these things. They're always writing felt pencil on control panels. You don't have to do that with software. You can put the operator's preference on the control panel so it speaks his language rather than the design engineer's language. Aux, let's go down to where that's used. MUA1, auto, running, heat on. So the aux column says something. How do you use this thing? You push on the control column. If you want to change SF4, you push where it says auto, and it's going to go to off and hand. It's a selector switch in a touchscreen digital mode. The name column is not filled in because operators call things different than engineers do. I want to fill in the operator preference. The control column is dynamic text, that is, the text changes on the screen in response to touchscreen input. An operator touches the control point for EF1, toggles from auto to hand to off. Status column is the light from the old control panel. The aux is a place for status of auxiliary functions as heat on for a makeup air unit. The alarm column will display the text version of each of the old alarm lights on the big enunciation panel. Each of the faults is well defined, a relay input from burner failure or duplicating the local panel general alarm. An OIT alarm column reports this in words. My current thinking is, how much of the ISA enunciator form do I duplicate? This is not especially easy. Panalarm and other manufacturers have been optimizing this for over 50 years. To duplicate it on the fly is non-trivial. My present concern is how to alarm when we tell a damper motor to open, but not alarm until it has a chance to achieve full travel. Sounds like a time delay relay for each alarm function. And this is easy to do in a PLC. You have an unlimited number of soft time delays. You don't have to go buy a timer for $50 and figure out which of the switch settings to use and the settings. There may be a software function built into the PLC software or the OIT configuration software for this. And again, this is the sort of thing I'm going to be investigating for part two of the course. We are done. This completes part one of 2010 Industrial HVAC Control Case. Please fill out the survey form following the quiz. I want these courses to meet your needs and answer the questions you have. Help me by telling me what it is you would like to see. Thank you very much.